When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the depths of the unknown, where darkness reigns and secrets are sown. Ghost, the master of the paranormal sphere, unveiling what's hidden, bringing truth clear.
Of the twisted and strange, prepare for a journey that'll rearrange.
Welcome to my third eye.
There's all these background things, you know, that are going on behind the scenes, and a lot of it, you know, more than most of us want to admit, probably has to do with money. And so money, you know, when you really follow that money, you said this earlier in the show, it's like really when you follow the money. And the other thing that's important, I think, to kind of watch with power dynamics is you kind of follow a little bit the gold. So dollars are one thing, but gold's the other. And I think gold throughout history, even though for all of what we talk about with fiats and governments left that, like the central bankers never gave up the belief that it's important to have gold. So, mm-hmm. You know, the Federal Reserve, you know, the European Central Bank, which was set up after we left the gold standard, you know, the first thing they did.
Ooh, it's hump day. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that means M3E is here. It's your weekly dose of the Third Eye Zone. Sit back and enjoy this. I hope you enjoy the guest as much as I enjoy talking to them. If you like this content and you want to be a supporter, go to patreon.com. Sign up. Got a $3, $5, and $10 tier. $3 gets you the full episode of this only. $5 and $10 tier is where it's at for the bang of the buck. You get all the video and extra bonus content that does come out. Okay, don't forget about your pets. PurePetWellness.com. Go there for all your pet CBD needs. Enter Ghost at checkout. You get 20% off your entire order. It's Ghost at checkout for 20% off your entire order. Now, that's it for housekeeping. Okay, we're going to sit back. We're going to get right into this. This is what we like to do. You don't need to hear all this. So sit back, enjoy this. I hope it gets you through your week and into the weekend. Enjoy. Ooh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to My Third Eye and the Third Eye Zone. You're in for a treat. I was honored and privileged enough to be reached out to from Mel's assistant and Mel Madison. That's with two T's, not D's. That's Mel Madison. And he's going to come on and blow your mind on some financial stuff and some other stuff and just see where the conversation goes. So, Mel, thank you for coming on. I know we had to reschedule from a previous week, but here we are. We're sitting down. We're going to talk. We're going to have some fun for the next 90 minutes and hopefully blow my mind and my audience's mind.
All right. Well, I hope so. And thanks for that great intro. So I'll do my best.
Well, thanks. Let people know where they can find you up front. That way, in case we forget and we get going in the conversation. And once you're done letting people know, you know, plug anything you want here, and then just take it away wherever you want to start.
Thanks. So I have a book. It's a financial thriller. It's called Quoz, Q-U-O-Z, as in Quantum Oz. And so you can find that by searching it on, you know, Google or wherever you search, just Q-U-O-Z, Quoz, financial thriller. It'll come up. It's a book that has themes that will touch on some of the real life topics that we're going to talk about here today. The book is fiction, but it's based upon the reality that's happening behind the scenes of all of us. And then I have a website, melmatison.com, M-E-L-M-A-T-T-I-S-O-N. search Mel Madison and that'll come up, melmadison.com. And that's pretty much it. Or, you know, I have a Twitter, melmadison1 as well. So all those things are good places to reach me.
Well, thank you. I have a Twitter as well. I don't get on there as much as I probably should. But you know, hey, we all have our own little hangouts and what have you, but I don't know. I like them all. There's some that kind of suck more than others, if you know what I mean, but it is what it is. But let's start with your book a little bit. Let the listeners know about your book. Maybe tease some chapters if you want. Don't give anything super away, you know, because we want people to go and buy your book.
Yeah. So, I mean, the tagline is basically corrupt central bankers, the blockchain, and quantum AI combine in a stock market supernova. So those are the three main ingredients: quantum AI, corrupt central banking, and essentially the stock market in a sort of financial apocalypse type situation. But it's not anything that comes from, you know, like a fairyland or something that's made up. So my background, I've worked 20 plus years in the financial markets. I have an MBA from Duke University. I've been the CEO of different, you know, financial service firms and broker dealers. And I have, I hope, some valuable insight into the actual functioning, mechanics, plumbing of what goes on in the economic system. And right now, I believe we're at a very, you know, precarious place with the entire dollar-denominated, debt-based, fiat-based currency system that was put in place back in 1944 under Bretton Woods. And so what I did in Quaz, which is a financial thriller, was I tried to scope out, like, what happens when quantum AI takes over capital markets, when you've got corrupt central bankers from various countries like Russia, India, China, playing havoc along with corrupt U.S. politicians and senators in a global chess game to move the financial pieces around and remove the dollar as reserve currency and replace it with a central bank digital currency. And so the other key component to it is it takes place, a lot of it, within the realm of an organization called the Bank for International Settlements, which a lot of people may have never heard of, but it's a real bank. It exists in Basel, Switzerland. Every 2 months, the leaders of the top central banks around the world go there to meet in secret, Jerome Powell, Christine Lagarde from the ECB, and they essentially plot the global monetary course behind closed doors. This bank has a nefarious background. Former directors were convicted of war crimes during World War II. They basically funded the Third Reich. So we basically got the core of the core of the international banking cabal that sits behind the central banks of the world and orchestrates, you know, the monetary strings of our societies. So all of those topics are interplayed in there, but set within like a thriller type narrative with, I hope, good stories, good characters, but also a little bit of education for the reader on some of the stuff that's happening that I've observed. And I mean, that's Quaz. The last thing I'll add is there's a little bit of homage where Quaz is a little bit of a play on Quantum Oz, because some people don't realize the Wizard of Oz itself was a bit of a monetary allegory, where Frank L. Baum wrote the original book. He had the Yellow Brick Road, which is emblematic of the gold standard. In the book, Dorothy wore silver shoes, which they changed to ruby slippers because it was filmed in Technicolor. And then you had the Emerald City, which was kind of representative of the fiat dollar type, you know, greenback type currency system, which was ultimately run by a fraud behind the curtain. So it's a little bit of an homage to Baum, and it's hopefully a good read. The reviews have been good so far, and I hope people will check it out if they're interested in these topics.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because not a lot of people realize that The Wizard of Oz was more based on the corrupt financial system, even of the time, or, you know, what he might have speculated going into the future. I don't know how far back you go into detail in the book, but you did mention some key players, especially around, you know, World War II and what have you, and important people being on the board. Henry Kissinger have any connection to that bank or board by any chance?
Okay, so if I was going to be able to give you a quote connection, mm-hmm. and sometimes I do have very good verifiable things, like this is not in dispute. I don't have that, you know, with Kissinger, but what I do know is that Kissinger was extremely highly involved in a lot of this stuff. And you have to realize he was a big player at the time that the United States stopped convertibility to gold of the dollar, known as us leaving the gold standard. And so Kissinger understood a lot of the big macroeconomic dynamics with the dollar-based system, the way that the United States, by virtue of being the reserve currency, was put into a situation where it essentially needed to perpetually expand its debt in order to fund dollars around the world to essentially circulate as, you know, the reserve of every other country, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's China or South Korea or Russia. Post-World War II, they ultimately all held dollars. And that's a good thing to remember, because a lot of people say we left the gold standard, but it wasn't a gold standard that we were on. We were on a gold exchange standard, where gold allegedly backed the dollar, and then every other currency was allowed to kind of float freely vis-a-vis the dollar. And then, you know, the central banks of France or Germany or whoever could convert or take their dollars to the United States ostensibly and then get gold at $35 an ounce. So that gold exchange standard and using the dollar as the actual reserve, the asset that all the central banks of the world held, meant that essentially the United States, like the groundwork was laid the moment Bretton Woods was approved, that we were going to become a debtor nation because we had to fund dollars for the world economy. We were going to hollow out our manufacturing because, you know, what we had to export was dollars and treasury bonds, debt. And we were going to be exporters of treasury bonds, and we were going to start importing everything else. And so all that die was cast by that monetary system, which has worked more or less okay, but is now gotten to such a precarious situation that it's on the verge of collapse. And it's also in a situation where other major players, such as Russia and China in particular, have recognized the kind of stupidity of holding reserves. They've been selling dollars and treasuries and buying gold, which is one reason why you have gold at a record high today. And that this dollar collapse, this shell game of the fiat currency, where the U.S. simply exports debt, is getting to an unsustainable level, which can pretty much only have one of two results, which is there's a default on the debt, or you inflate your way out of the debt. And by inflating the way out of the debt, you devalue the dollar and the currency. And we started to see a little bit of that in the last few years, but I think that's only the beginning of a greater devaluation of the dollar to come. And, you know, that's the path that I feel we're on.
So you brought up a couple key players. And obviously you probably already have done your research in that, and the formation of BRICS and what they're trying to do. And you already said, you know, they're buying gold, they're buying the assets and trying to go back to that. And you see where, because when I was little, you know, I'm 47, so I wasn't there at the beginning of the, you know, transition or whatever. But growing up, you always heard, yeah, we used to be on a gold-based system. And I was always told, you know, by grandparents or whatever, history books or teachers, if they were trying to teach the right thing, you know, you could take a dollar, essentially go into a bank and get a dollar's worth of gold. And we moved away from that and moved on to the petrodollar. And now we see where we are financially. I mean, we're a country that's so heavily in debt that, like you said, we have to, they're trying to inflate our way out of it. And now you see the common people can't even buy the same amount of groceries because inflation's getting so high and out of control, and they keep printing money. And then you have the formation of BRICS that's coming on the scene to kind of compete with what we're doing. And you're seeing other nations that did hold our dollar as their currency, are saying, no, we're not doing it anymore. We're done with you guys. How much worse does it get from here?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, gold, I mean, if you look at who is the largest owners of gold, it is still to this day, even though we're on a fiat system, it is the central banks of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, according to official figures, the United States owns approximately 8,000 tons of gold. The gold has not been audited. There is funky things that they do with leasing gold and different stuff. So it's tough to say exactly what we have and don't have underneath the Federal Reserve Bank in Manhattan and in Fort Knox. The other big gold depository of the world traditionally has been underneath the Bank of England and also in different banks in Switzerland. But China, which surpassed South Africa over a decade ago as the world's largest gold producer, has been hoarding gold. They forbid its export, and their official figures are they have like 2,000 tons of gold, which is absolutely ridiculous given the amount of gold they mine and different things. So what China's been doing is they've been setting up like essentially places where you can exchange yuan, Chinese currency, mm-hmm. for gold outside of China, places in Hong Kong, Singapore, in the Middle East. And so the goal here is that, number one, Arab nations historically have always loved gold, as have, you know, the Indian continent, the Chinese, Europe. I mean, you go around the world, I mean, gold is gold is gold. It's the gold standard, right? So the Middle East countries recognized when the United States left the gold standard that they needed to begin to parse out the oil. So when the dollar was convertible to gold, the incentive for Middle Eastern countries was to produce as much oil as possible so that they could get as much gold while the oil was pumping, because gold holds its value. Mm-hmm. Once we went off gold, the incentives changed for Middle Eastern countries. They no longer saw it in their interest to get as much dollars and treasury bonds, which is what they do with the dollars we give them for oil. They buy treasury bonds because they're going to lose their value. They said, we need to parse this out so that we're producing the oil that we need for dollars, so that then we can take those dollars and go spend them in Europe or China or whatever. And then they decided to form a cartel. So the formation of a cartel in OPEC after removing from the gold standard, and then the energy crisis that came, and then the inflation, all of these things were totally natural, predicted, and known, because just to take a step back is to realize, like, this is what we're really talking about. We're talking about, like, and I hate jargon, but it's like, you know, current accounts and trade deficits. But the way to think about it is, you know, the global system was set up so that everything comes down to gold, but the only thing that you can get gold with is dollars. And that was until 1971. And so dollars became essentially a proxy for gold. And so dollar was good. Nobody minded getting dollars as long as they knew at the end of the day they could do it to gold. Once we left that, you changed all of these dynamics. And so Saudi Arabia, who has been, one thing they love to talk about is, oh, the United States is the biggest producer of oil. But what's really important is not who the biggest producer is, it's who's the biggest exporters, net exporters, because they're the ones that are involved in this global chess game where they're holding reserves and they're getting paid in some currency or whatever. And so what the BRICS are doing right now is they are putting in place a whole system that excludes the dollar. It doesn't make it necessary. And to sum that system up really quick, it's going to be like China, the factory of the world. They are the largest importer. Saudi Arabia is the biggest exporter. They give yuan to Saudi Arabia, and they give enough yuan so that Saudi can, you know, buy any goods they want from China with those yuan. But then if they want to buy stuff in Europe or the United States, they're going to do net settlement in gold. And then what the Saudi Arabians will do, they can go to Singapore or these Qatar areas. They can change in Chinese currency, yuan, for gold. Then they can exchange that gold for euros or dollars, whatever they need to operate. And now they never need to hold U.S. treasuries. They can hold yuan and they can hold gold instead of needing to hold treasuries. And that's why, and this happened today as we're recording this. There was like a quick spike up in oil. And today is April 4th, if people want to go back and look at the market charts. And the stock market was up today. And all of a sudden, oil spiked above $85 a barrel. And the Dow Jones dropped over 800 points in like 2 hours. It went from up 300 and closed down 500, like almost immediately. And so what's happening is the oil price, and this is a fundamental concept of the way I look at the monetary world, is we think the dollar is the world's reserve currency, but we are not on a dollar-based economic system. The world in reality operates on an oil-based economic system. And you can include with that other exportable commodities. And so whoever has those commodities has a lot of leverage. And that's one reason why Russia, which has a small population, but also has nuclear weapons, they, after Saudi Arabia, are the biggest world exporter of oil and energy. And so this oil, energy, treasury bonds, dollar, gold, stock market, all that stuff is wrapped up into a big ball. And it's the central bankers are working really hard to keep that ball in a nice round shape so everything works. But it's kind of like a bubble where they're pushing on one end and it's pushing out on the other and pushing on the other. And it's getting to the point where that ball, that bubble is getting ready to burst. And that's why we're getting some of the situations that we're seeing in the stock market and with inflation, especially, and in other financial outcomes.
Now, you bring up the stock market, which is good, because I was trying to find a transition point or a jumping off point or a jump into point of the last president that we had in office, Trump, and why the stock market was setting record after record after record after record with him in office versus the previous administration and versus now. I mean, everybody touts Reagan, years is great for the stock market and people making money. I was a kid. I don't remember it. I remember Reagan being in office. That's about it. I remember seeing him give speeches. But, you know, as you're older, okay, I started paying attention a little bit when Clinton was in. You know, I went off to the military. I served under him. But then, you know, you had Bush, and then you had Obama, then Trump, and now Biden. Why was it so popping with Trump? Was it because of some of his policies, or was it just false inflation?
So we had the Federal Reserve at still extremely low interest rates when he came into office. And then as, you know, Powell tried to raise rates, the market started throwing a tantrum and they went down. And so essentially a lot of this really just has to do with the two things, like the money creation and the money printing, as well as this essentially inflationary bias that I think the investment community is starting to figure out is here to stay. So like, just to cut to the chase, like I actually think that, you know, stock market, although there's going to be a lot of volatility going forward, is going to do well.
Okay.
I think that gold and silver are going to do phenomenally well. I think Bitcoin probably will do well. I think homes will probably do well, because I believe that the powers that be at the end of the day, they realize there's two choices. They can default on the debt, which would be a complete calamity. Or the only way for the United States to kind of cover its obligations is going to be through a structurally long period of inflation. And the inflation is, it could hurt, for example, corporate profit margins, where their margins might get a little slimmer. But if an iPhone goes from $1,000 an iPhone to $3,000 an iPhone, the nominal amount of earnings that Apple will have will go up. And so as stock market earnings go up, not in real or inflation adjusted terms, but they go up in nominal terms, so does the value of the stock. Okay. But it will be worth less in real terms. So where the stock market will go down is against gold. It will go down against oil. So these asset prices, they keep going up, But you'll notice, like, the more asset prices skyrocket, the more the dollar relative to assets goes down. Mm-hmm. So we had an amazing stock market run in 2020 and 2021 after the COVID lows, but we also had massive money printing, and then we had massive inflation. So in real terms, these things are not going up in value at all. Okay. They're not going up vis-a-vis gold. They're not going up in that sense. They're just going up in nominal terms. And so what we're doing, and that's why you can look at things like the dollar index. The dollar index measures the dollar versus other currencies like the yen or the euro. The dollar might be strong. People say, oh, the dollar is strong. Well, yeah, the dollar is strong right now against the yen or the euro, but it's the weakest it's ever been against gold. It's okay. $2,300 against gold. So the dollar is the worst house in a bad neighborhood. But all fiat currencies are on like a race to zero. And this is why people are talking about Bitcoin and people are talking about gold and silver, because they understand that we're getting to a situation where the world is orchestrated as such that let me take one step back.
Oh, yeah, you're fine. Yeah.
There's a reason why, for example, they needed to release petroleum reserves, mm-hmm. A year ago, right? So oil was going up after Putin went into Ukraine. All these countries that are oil importers, like Japan, South Korea, China, when that happened, what did they have to do? They had to sell their treasury bonds, our debt, to get dollars to give to Saudi Arabia and other net exporters of energy. That caused a dumping of treasury bonds onto the market, which spikes rates. And when you spike rates, interest rates, you get things like what happened at Silicon Valley Bank, where there's bank runs and stuff, because all these banks own treasuries. And when interest rates go up, the prices of our bonds go down. So you had the reserve asset of the whole world essentially being devalued because oil was going up. And it's being devalued because the price of treasuries is going down. The price of treasuries is going down because everybody's trying to sell treasuries because they need dollars to give to Saudi Arabia to buy oil because the oil price has spiked. So there was getting to a point in 2022 where the normal thing to do in that situation is that you do like a quantitative easing where you buy treasuries to absorb that supply. But because we had 10% inflation at the time, the Federal Reserve couldn't say, hey, markets, don't worry about it. Fed is here to save the day. We're going to go out and start buying treasuries to stop a collapse. So in that situation, they had to go to the actual asset that was needed, which was oil. And they had to release our strategic supply and sell it to China and sell it to Japan and put it out there to stop them from selling treasuries, because otherwise the treasury market was going to collapse. And if the treasury market collapses, the whole ball waxes over. So when people think about the SPR and they say that's there for national security, in a sense it was used for national security, because if oil prices were going to continue spiking, we were going to head into a national security issue where the treasury bond market was going to collapse, which is the foundation of the entire world economic system.
Man, you explained that in such a more understanding way, because as someone that I have some stock, not much here and there. I have some XRP, some XLM. We'll get into that here in a little bit. But when that bank collapse happened, you had people, especially in the podcast and that lean a little conspiracy, ended, such as myself, but still try to find the middle, not left, not right, just find, look for the truth. Everybody's blaming the president or blaming this or blaming that. But the way you explained it and how I took it and understood it is that was completely out of Biden's hands. The president has no control over that. It's these world bankers that force the hand of whoever's in charge of whatever country. Hey, you need to do this or you're going to suffer. And then here, and I'm not a huge fan of presidents at all, but, Biden looks like the bad guy. I mean, and everybody is quick to rail. Oh, he's selling this. And then he's trying to buy it back at a higher price. Why would he do that? He's an idiot. But when you explain it the way you did, which when that bank collapse came out, I wish I would have known you then and you know, the run on the bank and what have you, had you come on and explain it, because I think you would have cleared up a lot of these conspiracy loose ends where people were speculating too much and trying to pin, because they might lean more harder right, or, you know, might defend because they lean harder left, and not try to come to the middle and get the right answer. You know what I mean? Because what you're explaining, from a financial perspective, is it doesn't matter who's in charge of any country, that ball that needs to stay intact, it's the powers that be that are running it, which in the conspiracy world we'd call the 13 families, this, you know, the global cabal, this, you know, all these secret societies or whatever. And now, I don't know, the way you explain that, I was just sitting here, I'm just like,
well, look, huh. I mean, that's my view of the world. I mean, you know, there's three quotes that start off Quaz. One is from Thomas Jefferson, which is, banking establishments are more dangerous than standing armies.
Ooh.
The second one is from Mayor Rothschild, you know, give me the power and print the coin's money, or nation's money. I care not who makes its laws.
Mm.
And the third is J.P. Morgan. Money is gold, nothing else. And so, you know, we can talk about Bitcoin and the way it's trying to be a digital gold, which I think is great in theory, but I do think there are things about Bitcoin that are better than gold, but Bitcoin is not proven. Bitcoin hasn't been through world wars. It hasn't been through famines. It hasn't been through plagues. It hasn't been through, you know, the development of a quantum computer that could crack encryption and who knows what it could do to the blockchain. So,
right.
You know, I think Bitcoin has great things about it, but I think it has, you know, other things. But one of the best things about Bitcoin is there's no use for it. Gold, there's a little bit of an actual use for it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And one thing is that the ideal money actually has no use in society, because then it doesn't matter what the value of that commodity is. So, like, if you tried to make oil money, that would be horrible, because if you try to fluctuate the value of money, but it's oil and it's actually needed, it's going to impact things in the real economy. What you want to have as money is something that actually has no function in the real world. And so in that case, Bitcoin is purely, you know, there's no industrial uses.
Mm.
Gold has a few industrial uses. So in that case, you know, that's actually, Bitcoin's a little bit better. What Bitcoin has against it, you know, we could also always go into. But to get back to the broader point about what's happening, yes, these forces that are in place, they go back, in my mind, approximately 330 years or so, really. Like, you have to go back to 1694, and the founding of the Bank of England, and what I believe was the beginning of a post-medieval transition where wealth in its ultimate form was land, and it began to get transferred into money.
So we're going back to like the Knights Templar era.
Yes, and the Bank for International Settlements is a modern-day Knights Templar.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're set up to do. They're based in Basel, Switzerland. They hold the gold of the world's central banks, so that if Central Bank A wants to sell gold to Central Bank B, they don't have to send, you know, shipments of gold. It's all under, and this is the way that Adolf Hitler was able to get his hands on Czechoslovakian gold after he invaded Czechoslovakia, because the gold wasn't in Czechoslovakia. The Czechs thought that their gold was safe because it was in the hands of the BIS. But the BIS, upon, you know, notice from Hitler's minions, actually released it. But Hitler knew he wanted his physical gold. So the Bank of International Settlements did two changes. They had to change a sub-account held at the Bank of England, and then another sub-account they had at a bank in Amsterdam. And then they put the physical gold into trucks and railway cars, and they sent it to Berlin so that Hitler had money to fund his war machine. And this Bank for International Settlements, as I said, this still exists in Basel, Switzerland. The leaders of all the 63 countries go there and meet every 2 months in secret. No minutes are released. No press is allowed. Who attends is not allowed. And they are the ones that are on the forefront of all of the innovation and development around central bank digital currencies. They have all these code names, Project Aura, Project Gora, Project Gaia, all these things that mash together AI, central bank digital currencies, what they call green finance, and they put all of this together and they're trying to lay this groundwork. And a lot of it is done with like the Hong Kong, something called the Hong Kong Monetary Authority. So this is the global powers that, you know, these are like kind of like the ancestors or the modern day offspring of like the Rothschilds. Like, you know, the Rothschilds kind of were the OGs of like how this all works. They were the ones funding France and Napoleon and funding England and making money off of both. And, you know, like when Napoleon lost at Waterloo, Rothschild in England knew that France had lost, but because he had special couriers before anybody else in London knew, he sent out people to spread disinformation that France actually won. That drove down the value of British bonds. He bought British bonds, sold his French bonds. And then when the true news came out, he reversed it all and eliminated his competition, made all this money. And you can go into the Rothschild documents back and forth where they're making all this money off of these wars and things. They're like, yeah, but if when one of them loses, we lose a little bit on those investments. And like they use the term in their letters, well, we need to create an armed peace. Like these are these guys sitting behind the scenes, like creating the military industrial complex. And this is not like anything in the 20th century. So what's happening today, and when somebody like Biden or it's Trump or whoever it is in the figurehead position of president, like they're like cornered in the back of a room. And then you get the finance guys, the military guys, you know, come into that room and they say, if we don't do X, you know, the world's going to blow up. And then the president doesn't have a choice. Right. Like he just says, okay, do what you need to do. And if that's sell the SBR, if it's print dollars, if it's do quantitative easing, if it's drop interest rates to zero, whatever it is, what do we need to do so that we don't have either World War III or a Great Depression that makes the 1930s look like good times?
Jeez. And we and people in the conspiracy realm think Bohemian Grove is secret. You know, what you're describing makes Bohemian Grove look like a day at Disneyland.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's cross-pollination in all of these groups. And, you know, you can go back to like the Bank for International Settlements and the lawyers for them, like Sullivan and Cromwell and the Dulles brothers and the connections of, you know, during the war, because Basel, Switzerland is right in between France and Germany. They moved themselves a little south to Bern, Switzerland, which was also where Alan Dulles set up shop to basically create this, the Central Intelligence Agency. There's a reason, in my opinion, why even though there were tons of neutral countries like Holland and stuff, Hitler just went in and took them. He didn't take Switzerland. He didn't take Switzerland because Switzerland was performing a function. The bankers were protected because they were above Hitler, above Roosevelt, above Stalin.
Damn. Wow. This man, I'm almost at a loss for words because you start getting into, you know, you're talking about, you know, Dulles creating the CIA. It's known that, you know, and a lot of people don't like to hear it, but Disney was and Ford, they were pro Hitler. They sent money, you know, this and that. I mean, Hitler was even Time Magazine's Man of the Year at one point.
Yeah, and, 1938.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, all this bad stuff happened, but he was able to go in and essentially steal this gold and fund his war machine. And then if you look back, you had Americans funding some of it, but then we decide, oh, wait, no, he's a bad guy, so we have to fight against him. But then we won, he lost, and where did all that gold go? Did it go back into, did we take it, or did it go back to Switzerland? Did some of it still go with him, quote unquote, maybe to Argentina, you know, where he may or may not have ended out the days of his lives? When you get into secret societies and all these moving parts, the biggest connection between all of them is the money. It's you know, the world banks. That's what everybody talks about. You know, it's all these, you know, money movers and this and that. And, you know, the people, oh, if you know their name, then they're not that important. You know, they might be a key player, but they might just be a pawn, you know, or maybe a rook, or, you know, maybe he's a knight, but you never know who the king or the queen is in the whole game.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of two things. I think it's a combination of the reality of nefarious, like Luciferian in some types, Kabbalic type organizations, groups with evil psychopathic intent. That's part of it. But then it's also a part of a system which has been designed such that it also forces, even if you're not part of that group, it forces your actions in such a way that from the outside, it appears like you're working for that group. So whether you're part of that group, and there are people that kind of, I think, understand this and have this secret knowledge, and they're kind of clued into it and they're profiting from it, but it's almost like it's on autopilot.
Yeah.
Like the system is on autopilot, but they're clued into it all, and they're in Machiavellian ways profiting and pulling the strings. But they almost don't even have to do anything. But when things might start get out of whack, when maybe people start understanding a little more than they want them to understand, you know, there are things that some of these people do that they have enough power to pull off to kind of keep things on that autopilot track. And, you know, you talk about Hitler, like Hitler was one of those guys that was totally financed and put in place by this ultimate elite power. And then he went off the rails. I mean, mm-hmm. He rebelled against it, and that's why he had to be taken care of. And so at the end of the day, however, the economic policy that they originally were going to use Hitler to implement, they did implement. So the main three goals of the Third Reich economic policy was, one, get rid of borders for trade and labor. You know, two, institute a common currency. And three, have it all be run out of the headquarters of Mayor Rothschild himself, his hometown, Frankfurt, Germany. And that is exactly what we have today. The borders are gone. There's a single currency. It's run by the European Central Bank. And where is the European Central Bank born? In the birthplace of the godfather of the Rothschilds, Frankfurt, Germany. So we have the Third Reich economic policy. We just don't have it under the name of the Third Reich. And if you look at how ECB functions, it is just 100% dominated by Germany, because Germany is the largest economy in Europe. It has the most people. It has the most GDP. So the Bundesbank, the German central bank, essentially is the ECB. And so all this stuff is happening, like, according to their goals and wishes, the Rothschilds and the, you know, the Conference of Vienna and all these things that they started dreaming about in the 1800s, about an international globalist finance system that they could manipulate and control and become even more wealthy about and get rid of national sovereignty and individual freedoms and all these things that they wrote about back then and talked about, like they're putting them into place. But the problem is that there was a couple of fatal flaws and big missteps that they did in 1944 when they did Bretton Woods that are finally starting to come home to roost. And one of the biggest problems they did was they made the US dollar the world reserve currency. And that set the United States off on this path of becoming a debtor nation. It just needed to produce dollars, and it was going to eventually get unsustainable. And what we have done, you know, on a national level, is we've printed so much money, we've devalued the dollar so much that the economy is ceasing to get the juice from the money. So you used to have to maybe print a little bit of money and you got the juice. Now we're having to print like $2 trillion a year in deficits. And we're having to put more and more money, if you think about money as the energy of the economy, more and more energy in for less and less output. And at a certain point, you start putting more energy in than output you get back. And now it becomes, you know, like a losing system. And once that happens, then you're in real trouble. And that's why I think in like 5 to 10 years, we're heading for the need for an almost another economic reset, Bretton Woods 2.0. And I think that the ultimate escape valve for that is going to be a massive devaluation of the dollar in the coming decade, that the inflation we saw in the last few years is just a taste of what's to come.
So to break it down in layman's terms, basically, when are they going to OD? Because, you know, the first time a person drinks a beer, all right, they might get tipsy off one beer. But over time, it might take them 10, 12 beers, you know, or 30, or even like the heroin addict, you know, that, okay, a little bit, and now he's addicted, and now he can't stop. He's a junkie, you know, constant, I don't know how often someone has to shoot up. But that's basically the same thing of, okay, you printed a little bit of money, and boom, you got that instant high. You got that gratification. Well, now it takes a little bit more, and a little bit more, and a lot more, and a lot more, and a lot more. When does it collapse, or in a layman's kind of term, OD, and it either dies or, you know, gets resuscitated, and hopefully we can move on to something bigger and better.
I think that, you know, a lot of people have talked about like something like this happening for a while. And so you have to be a little careful on the timing, because mm-hmm. it's not that people are wrong about it. It's that they find these ingenious, clever ways to like extend and pretend.
Right.
And they do things that you think is not even possible. Like if you would have told somebody in 2007 when the financial crisis happened and everybody was flipping out because they needed to pass a bank bill for $700 billion and they were acting like that's crazy. And now people look at $700 billion like it's nothing, you know, like, oh, our deficit is like three times that, you know, mm-hmm. like, yeah. you know, this is in the middle of a, the government and the system has been able to, and they do this through different ways. So I'll give you like an example without trying to get too technical on it. But like during COVID, they do a couple of things, right? So one thing they do is they take away the reserve requirement for banks. So banks normally, you get $100, they can loan out 90. They say, mm-hmm. no, now your reserve requirement is zero. So they allow banks to essentially have the power to print money. And then what they do is, they need people to buy this massive debt, right? And they're running out of buyers because the normal big buyers like China and Saudi Arabia and Russia, they're no longer wanting to play this dollar game, and they're organizing their own stuff and they're buying more gold. They're doing what they call de-dollarization. And so they need more buyers. And there was just last week a letter from an industry group. It's the industry group on like swaps and derivatives that they sent to like the Federal Reserve, the OCC, the comptroller of the currency. And basically they were arguing in these Basel III. Now note the term if you've heard it. Have you heard of Basel III? Basel III are the bank requirements. They're called Basel III because they don't want to call it Bank for International Settlements III, because the Bank for International Settlements is, you know, Nazi connections.
Right.
So it takes Basel Accords take place in Basel, Switzerland at the Bank for International Settlements headquarters. They just don't want to call it. And this is where the global bankers meet together to set the banking standards. Now, you know, some people might say, what the hell are you talking about, Mel? What I'm talking about is like things like how much money does like JP Morgan need to keep in US dollars or treasuries? Like how much can they go and loan out to crazy things or put bets on the stock market with? How much do they need here? These reserve requirements. And they're very low. I mean, so the reserve requirement on US treasuries is like 3%. So there's a very little amount that they need to keep in actual like cash in order to lever up these things. And the International Swaps Market or Industry Organization just sent a letter to the Fed saying we need for treasuries to have zero reserve requirement, which will allow banks to essentially print money like the Fed is. So right now we're familiar with the Fed printing money mm-hmm. where they just enter numbers on a computer. But if you put in a 0%, what they call SDR, supplementary leverage ratio, a 0% requirement on this, then banks can essentially go out and absorb any treasury bond supply that comes out there. And so it's more printing of money, but you don't have to tell the public that the Federal Reserve is buying it. Now you can have the banks do it through the back door. But at the end of the day, the result of this is it allows for the massive creation of money. And the reason why they want to create massive amounts of money is because they will deny it from, you know, here to 6 days from tomorrow, But they know at the end of the day, I think what they really want is they want a long period of significant inflation. Like that is their true goal, but they could never say that because they realize if they don't have, we need like US GDP is like 25, 26 trillion. We need the US GDP to grow to like $40, $50 trillion a year in the next 5 or 10 years. Then we can handle the debt load. The only way to do that, there's no way we can actually grow that way in what they call real terms.
Right.
But we can inflate our ways to a $40 or $50 trillion a year economy. And so they realize that we need, the only way that we're not going to default on our debt or cause the Great Depression, next great, is to inflate away the debt. And other countries don't like this. And the people that, when you inflate away debt, the people that hate it the most are the people that, you know, loaned you that money for the debt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's countries like China and Russia.
Right.
So they're really pissed at us now because for decades they've been selling us oil and China's been working and sending us goods in return for treasuries. And they know we're getting ready to poof that value away through inflation. We're getting ready to, in a way, screw them over. We gave them a bunch of IOUs that they thought were worth something. And we're going to say, ha ha, these IOUs aren't going to be worth jack. And they're upset about it. And so they're playing games now. There's no reason not to believe that Putin could not have been behind Iran telling Iran to foster Hamas because oil had gotten down to $65 a barrel last summer. And, you know, maybe it takes a couple months to plan the operation, but all of a sudden October 7th happens. Now you have oil at $86 a barrel in the U.S., $90 Brent crude. And now you have Putin's pocketbooks are full and everything is hunky-dory again. So all – and then you get issues with, you know, the treasury bond market and everything else. But all these little games they're playing, like when you look at it through this lens, they start to make sense, stuff that doesn't make sense. And even immigration can start to make perfect sense, why we needed to import 5 million workers in the last few years. It makes total sense, and it has nothing to do with filling Democratic voter calls. It has nothing to do with any of that. It has to do with baby boomers retiring, a need for cheap labor, and because they know we have to inflate our money supply in order for corporations to keep their profit margins, they can't allow wages to rise as much as goods are going to rise because of this inflation, so they need to dump cheap labor into the U.S. This has nothing to do with voter registration rolls, in my opinion. This is the economic cabal recognizing there is a labor crisis that needs millions and millions and millions of cheap laborers in the United States.
So these guys sit around, they put their little grimy hands together, and they conspire, you know, and they're doing all this stuff, and they come up with this idea. And now we're in 2024, their ideas are like full in effect. Do they not stop and realize, or are they that into themselves that they think they've created this great thing, but yet someone like you explaining it to someone like me, and I'm sitting here going, y'all created a fucked up system. Like it's broke from the get go, but you want everybody else to think it works perfect. But in how I'm gathering it, we don't really even need money. If that makes sense, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I can say this bar of soap to me, that's worth $50. You give me $50 when in all actuality, it ain't worth $2. And maybe that's why the barter and trade system kind of went away and they pushed to this. Man, this is way above and beyond local politics, national politics, and global politics. I mean, these guys control the world, whether you look at it round or flat, whatever people's beliefs are out there. I don't want to... but these people are evil. They're scumbags.
Yeah. I go back to the first time that we generally, at least according to, you know, Orthodox history, as we started creating more food than we needed. You know, I mean, like, you immediately see an elite class, you know, come into play, and what they need to do is they need to find a way to control the population through essentially like meaningless activity, because uh-huh. The essentials are taken care of. People you know, can live out in the open because they know how to do that back then. Food is easy to get. And so you've got people running around. They've got food. They've got housing. There were no healthcare to pay for back then because, you know, you had just shaman. So how do you control people? You create artificial scarcity and you put them to work on a meaningless project like cutting stone and stacking it one on top of the other. You know, I think a lot of people will say, why did they build the pyramids? I think they did it to keep people busy. You know, I think they felt like they needed a project that basically could never be finished.
Right.
And that didn't cost anything and that you could take, who, and they did it in a very creative, symbolic, amazing way. And so I'm not distracting from people that have beliefs in ley lines. Maybe this is a good point to step back about how I do think there could be, you know, there's a certain Luciferian, almost angelic, like there are ways to tie all this in. And when I really get my mind going and allow myself to just leave any sort of realm of what I think I know or don't know, you know, this could be an angelic, demonic battle that's being played out, and we're heading toward the revelation end times. And this is, you know, the trumpets are blowing, you know, the toes, the sandals of Daniel, the different bloodlines, the Western, like the forces are lining up for this ultimate, you know, showdown that's going to, you know, generally, according to Revelation, I believe Satan goes back underground for about 1,000 years. So I don't think it necessarily promises good times forever at the apocalypse, but it says there's this ultimate battle, you know, good times come, Satan gets chained up for 1,000 years, and then the whole thing, I would guess, starts again. But maybe we're heading for that. You know, maybe we're heading towards this final battle, and one way or the other, we have to figure out, are we going to get through this collapse that's coming by reverting to our old ways, which is war? And by the way, I think that World War III would have started 10, 20 years ago, except for the fact that for the first time we have nuclear weapons that are, anytime society goes through one of these collapse cycles, which are very common, you know, the release valve is war. And we don't have that luxury anymore of a release valve,
right,
you know, where you can get rid of excess population, you can reset the economic system. You know, war serves all those purposes to rejuvenate society. But we don't have those. We can't do that anymore because of nuclear weapons. So we have this unbelievable challenge in front of us as a species, is how do we handle the release valve that we need because of all these imbalances? And these imbalances are almost exactly the way they built up ahead of World War I and World War II. The economic situation right now in this country between the 1970s and today, it almost perfectly mirrors 1820s to 1850s America, where you had almost no millionaires in 1820s America. And between 1820, with the coming of railroads and the robber barons and everything else, you had these people like Vanderbilt that all of a sudden become, you know, the modern day decabillionaires and stuff like that just did not exist. And you had this disparity of wealth where if you took all the money that the United States paid out in wages to workers, as a percentage of GDP, meaning percentage of the total economy, it was cut in half between 1820 and 1850 ahead of the Civil War. Well, that same thing happened in the United States between 1970 and 2020. The amount of money going to wages to workers is 50% of what it was relative to GDP. And so what that does is that creates two things. Number one, when the rich get richer, you get an overabundance of elites. You get too many wealthy people that are fighting for the same power positions because the, you know, Congress didn't double, but the number of wealthy people doubled.
Right.
You know, the presidency, there's only one presidency. That's why you had, you know, 18 people running for president and, you know, all this stuff. So you have more elites running for the same power, and you get frustrated elites because they can't get the power, and they become counter elites. And as counter elites, they can now go to the masses who are unhappy because their wealth has been cut in half, and they can marshal those to then create, you know, a counter, you know, revolutionary guard, and you disrupt the society. And this history, and this is not 100% my original thinking. This is a guy, Peter Techin, I think is his name. He has a book called End Times. And if you read about it, he goes through all this. This is a scientist whose PhD who started out studying population growth, like in butterflies and beetles. And then they have these great times and everything's abundant and they have these massive populations and then they crash. Yep. And he said, what if I could take the scientific understanding of, you know, animal growth and supplant it onto humans? And he was like shocked, like it actually works. And he's like, this same thing happened in 1800s America. It's happening to us now. It happened in 13th century France. It happened in 18th century China when they had the Taiping Civil War, which is the largest civil war in world history, where anywhere from 30 to 70 million people died. So like all these types of things are happening and we are right now at that point. And so that's why we're close to like, you know, these end time type situations, because all the signs are lining up.
So you said something that kind of sparked my interest and I wrote it down here. Trump pressure cooker, Biden wars. And you were talking about how the relief valve.
I'm bad shit. What you read in the covenant is cap. I was bred by the government. Fact check every head when it come to this upside down system. Had enough of it. Another sapien that's on the globe. Lost cold, looking for the direction, but don't nobody know. The only bit of insight that they ever sold me, I've been starting to find out, doesn't really hold. Every highfalutin piece of shit hidden in a tie, high motives to align goals. Cheating on your wife, my ties at the ninth hole. Someone gotta die, they don't care, they itemize souls. Tit jobs from Botox to lipos. Light bulbs in my head of where I might go. I'm on a tightrope, walking this edge. And I've been wondering if anyone loves me. Shit. And I've been wondering if anyone loves me. Yeah. Fuck. And I've been wondering if. Look, I've been hopping down this rabbit hole for quite some time to find lines that connect through to all their lies. They normalize a real life poltergeist to trust Pfizer with a remedy to make you right. The thought's sick, I take a chance and roll my dice because something in my stomach isn't sitting right. I want a soul search, find a place to bring in light, but I can't cause, fuck. I'm bad shit, what you read in the covenant, it's cap, you were fed by the government. Fact check every head when it come to this upside down system. Had enough of it. We batshit what we read in the covenant. It's cap. We were fed by the government. Fact check every head when it come to this upside down system. Had enough of it. I want the power to shake shit and shift shape. Tap into pineal eye without a mistake. We have the power to live right and get straight. But they found a way to remove this. They bitch made. Ay. Keep on calcifying glands with your flow ride while I flow ride the valor of rhyme. I'm flying high by the seat of my pants. A beat speaking to me, know I'm talking back every chance. Hoping one day I make it overseas or to France. But in the Northwest, I trip without a traveling band. Yeah. And that's word to my cat plug. I'm higher than giraffe puss. Look what the cat drug in. Now I'm scribbling this rap in the bathtub. At midnight, I don't fill it up with the tap cup. Soaking in my cannabis suds. Anything for a buzz. Reclaim my residue inside of a dab jug. Peel through a fat stash, burning the last nug. I picture this dimension I don't want to come back from. But here I am, still stuck in the bathtub. My brain fried, but honestly, I'm fine. I'd rather not have one. I'm batshit. I'm fucking bad shit, and it's your fucking fault. It's their fault. Straight up. I'm done. I'm bad shit, what you read in the covenant. It's cap, you were fed by the government. Fact check every head when it come to this upside down system. Had enough of it. Enough of it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.